Did the 16th President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, invent the chokeslam? We'll find out on this week's episode of The Internet Says It's True. Welcome, welcome, welcome to The Internet Says It's True, where every week we learn something that sounds like I made it up, but it's really true, part of the WCBE podcast experience. My name is Michael Kent. This is episode 182. Thanks again for tuning in. This week is another Rewind episode, and I really appreciate you hanging in there with me. We still have some pretty serious family health issues going on, and I appreciate all the good thoughts, vibes, prayers, whatever it is that you do as we work through this. It's a crazy time in our family right now, and it's about to be crazy for me professionally with some news that I just got this week. That's good crazy, but it looks like I'll be away for a while performing. So I'm going to do my best to do that while also dealing with the family stuff and with the podcast. You can imagine I am stretched a little thin. I had an amazing show at Miami of Ohio University last weekend. Incredible group of folks there. That was for their League of Geeks event, which was, oh my gosh, just a ton of fun, and it was great to be back at Miami. I'll be putting that show up soon for Tizziters. I think I may actually edit that one up and put it up on sale for everyone. I'll let you know. I want to send a special welcome to new Tizziter Bill. Thank you so much for joining up. If you want to join Bill and the others who have just become Tizziters, head over to patreon.com/MichaelKent. Pledge any amount you'd like. When you do that, you get access to cool stuff. Again, it's patreon.com/MichaelKent. Become a Tizziter today.
I am once again asking for your financial support.
Also, be sure to send in a rating and review of the podcast. I always really appreciate when you do that. So today's episode is one that recently got reposted on TikTok. It made the rounds. It's a crazy story about our 16th president and a contribution he may have made to pro wrestling. So let's get on with it.
Let's get on with it.
Michael Kent, Joseph Moore here of Affirmative Distraction and the Conspiracy Band. Listen, none of that's important. Somebody told me that Abraham Lincoln, old Abe, invented the choke slam wrestling move. What? I don't know. I don't believe it. Could you do an episode on that? And then get back to me? Have my people call your people and we'll do lunch. Of course, I'm too busy for lunch, so it'll just be you and my people. Thanks. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Thank you, Joseph. Now, I knew Abraham Lincoln defeated the Confederacy and hunted vampires, but I never knew he invented any wrestling moves. Let's take a look. The choke slam is a move in professional wrestling where one person grabs the throat of another person, lifts them into the air, and then slams them to the ground.
Undertaker with Shane! Shane gonna go for the ride! Choke slam!
The choke slam!
With a massive choke slam!
Oh, man! Choke slam! Straight to hell!
In professional wrestling, this is accomplished by grabbing the defender at the top of the chest, just under the jaw. The defender grabs the attacker's arm, and then the attacker will put the defender's right arm over his shoulder, and then he'll usually grab the waist or the back to help support the weight as it lifts the defender into the air. The defender then falls and straightens out at the last minute to help spread out the impact of the fall. Now, that's a very simplified and summarized version of the move, and you definitely should not try it unless you've had a professional teach you the proper way to do it. If you don't know the ins and outs of these wrestling moves, you could get seriously hurt. So, in case I have to say it, a chokeslam doesn't involve actual real-life choking, but it's a popular finishing move for wrestlers like The Undertaker, Kane, The Big Show, and more. They'll sometimes make it even more exciting by slamming their opponent out of the ring and through tables, or from inside the ring to outside on the floor, and there are like 10 variations on the move, each with their own specific name based on the positions and whatnot, but we don't need to get into that. What's important is that it's a move so popular, even non-wrestling fans know what it is. If I say chokeslam, you have a basic idea of what I'm talking about. You'll only see it in professional wrestling, or backyard brawls. It's not technically legal in UFC or MMA fighting because you can't grasp the throat. You could maybe do a version of it if you could execute some sort of legal hold around someone's neck first, but it's not a really useful move in those sports anyway. It's mostly just for show. So let's talk about where it came from. In professional wrestling, there's this claim that it was first performed by the wrestler 911 in the mid-1990s and was invented by his promoter/manager Paul Heyman. And we know that 911 frequently used it as a finishing move, even chokeslamming a referee in one match.
With the shooter, the crippler! And 911 now in the home of referee John Pee-wee Moore! He's got him up! He's gonna slam dunk him like a basket!
But I did a lot of searching, and it seems it's pretty clear that neither Paul Heyman nor 911 brought the chokeslam to professional wrestling. The earliest I can find is from a Japanese wrestler, Akira Taue, who wrestled starting in the late 80s. His popular finishing move was the chokeslam. If you don't speak Japanese, just trust me, that was a video of Akira Taue chokeslamming a dude. But the move itself, not just the professional wrestling move, the move itself has an origin much older than the 1980s. I'm sure there were hundreds of street fights where people used the move, but for the purpose of this story, we're looking for the first time it was actually described in print, the first time we can prove someone chokeslammed someone else. And it goes all the way back to the summer of 1831. And a lanky 6'4" general store employee in Illinois. We'll talk about that after a quick break. If you love listening to this podcast every week and you want to show your support, that would mean a great deal to me. You can do that by becoming a Patreon member. We've got members at all levels, whether you want to pledge $1 a month or $10 a month. Just think about the value that you receive from this show. And if you like the histories and the stories that you learn about or the jokes that you hear, and if you think that they're worth it, consider signing up. For that, you get every episode ad-free and a week early, access to bonuses like the unedited videos of the guest appearances, and 20% off all merchandise. You can sign up today at patreon.com/MichaelKent. That's patreon.com/MichaelKent.
I'm John DeSando, host of Back Talk. This podcast is an extension of the long-running, award-winning movie review show, It's Movie Time. Back Talk features additional content and banter with guests about new movies. If you want more insight and information about what's playing now in theaters and online, find Back Talk at the WCBE Podcast Experience on wcbe.org. You'll be happy you did.
There was a time that humans used 100% organic products as healing balms and moisturizers for their skin. Well, I've partnered with an awesome company that wants to get back to those times. Fatco sells organic and responsibly made tallow-based skincare products. For centuries, humans used tallow in skin moisturizers and healing balms, but unfortunately, the topical application of these fats seemed to stop around the same time that animal fats stopped being considered part of a healthy diet. A lot of modern skincare products do more harm than good by stripping your skin of its natural oils. Let's change that. You can try them out now at fatco.com and get 15% off your order by using my promo code INTERNET. Go to theinternetsaysitstrue.com/deals for the link. Let's get back to the story. If you go visit the National Wrestling Hall of Fame and Museum in Stillwater, Oklahoma, you'll find that Abraham Lincoln is immortalized there, honored with their Outstanding American Award. There's a display about Lincoln and other presidents who enjoyed wrestling, and a large mural of Abraham Lincoln wrestling with a man named Armstrong. It's the very match that we're interested in. There are so many legends and tall tales about Lincoln's wrestling career, it's hard to separate fact from fiction. We know that he enjoyed the sport and was known for his wrestling ability as a young man. One of the legends is that he wrestled 300 men and was only beaten once. Of course, in the rough and tumble prairie of Lincoln's youth, wrestling wasn't so much an organized sport as it was just sort of fighting. There are a few of Lincoln's bouts that are well documented. In the recollected works of Abraham Lincoln by Don and Virginia Fehrenbacher, Lincoln tells a story on the campaign trail about his wrestling days. In 1860, he told a college professor named Risdon Moore that he was undefeated until he was thrown twice by a man named Lorenzo Dow Thompson, a man who, according to Lincoln, could throw a grizzly bear. Another one of the well-documented matches is the one with a man named Jack Armstrong. Armstrong was the young leader of a group of tough guys. Now, I don't know if you'd call them a gang, but they were a group of ruffians that lived in the next settlement over, from where a 22-year-old Abe Lincoln worked in a general store. Lincoln was in New Salem, Illinois, and these guys were from Clary's Grove. The Clary's Grove boys would come into New Salem to drink, gossip, trade, and play. The store owner where Lincoln worked, Denton Offutt, used to brag on how tough Abraham was. He would claim that the 6'4" Lincoln was faster and tougher than any man around. Well, Bill Clary, whose family founded Clary's Grove, didn't believe him. He bet Denton Offutt $10 that Lincoln couldn't beat Jack Armstrong in a wrestling match. when Lincoln reluctantly agreed, a whole crowd of people gathered in front of the general store in New Salem. Now, there are differing accounts here on what happened. Some say Armstrong won, others say Lincoln won. But what we know for sure is that someone cheated and the match got ugly. It's thought that maybe Armstrong attempted to foul Lincoln with some sort of dirty move and Lincoln got mad. Abe grabbed Armstrong by the throat, lifted him off the ground with his enormous height, and shook him out like a wet rag before dropping him to the ground. From there, it sounds like the rest of the Clary's Grove boys jumped on Lincoln, beating and kicking him as he laughed. I have to say, picturing this now, it kind of makes Lincoln sound like a psychopath. In any case, what we know is that Lincoln and Armstrong ended the match by shaking hands and being friendly. And believe it or not, this match gained Lincoln entry with the group of boys and made him welcome anywhere in town. Later, Armstrong called Lincoln, quote, the best fellow who ever broke into camp. Lincoln later became great friends with Armstrong and his wife. After the passing of Jack Armstrong, their son Duff was arrested for murder. Lincoln represented him. He taught Duff how to read while in prison. And Duff Armstrong's defense became Lincoln's most well-known court case. The eyewitness described seeing Armstrong murder a man named James Metzger one night by the light of the full moon. When it was Lincoln's turn to cross-examine the witness, he proved with an almanac that there was no full moon that night. Duff Armstrong was found not guilty. Despite his client being found not guilty, do you know who is guilty? Abraham Lincoln, of officially being the first recorded account of choke-slamming a dude during a wrestling match. So yes, the internet says it's true. And while he never jumped off a turnbuckle or donned a championship belt, Abraham Lincoln, the great emancipator and the 16th president of these United States, officially invented the choke slam.
Choke slam! The choke slam! With a massive
choke slam! Hey!
Well, now it's time for the part of the podcast where I call a friend, and today I'm calling Navpreet Singh. I met Nav when he was a college student who was on the board that brought acts like me to NYIT, but I was always really impressed with Nav because he is also an incredible poet, something which he continues to this day. His TikTok account is very popular, and I'll just let him introduce himself through one of his videos there.
Hi, my name is Navpreet Singh. I go by Nav. It rhymes with love. I'm a spoken word artist that travels and performs, sharing my art, stories, and experiences to break barriers and build bridges. I also accomplish this through my social media platforms. I share my poetry, analyze and discuss media with a focus on representation, address bias and discrimination, and lastly, I educate about my Sikh faith. Sikhi, known as Sikhism, was founded in the 1500s. Sikhs believe in one divine creator and the oneness of the universe. Key tenets are equality for everyone, selfless service, and fighting against bigotry, oppression, and injustice, striving for sarvadapala, or the well-being of all, which are principles I seek to embody in my daily life. Much love to you all.
It is so good to see you. It's been a while since we hung out.
Hey, man, how are you doing?
I'm very well. I'm just, you know, hanging out at home for the weekend. This podcast in particular is about professional wrestling. And I thought, for some reason, I had it stored in the back of my head that you are a big professional wrestling fan.
Yeah.
And I think we may have once upon a time had a conversation about this. But that's not why I chose you to be on this week, because I never match the guests to the topic. I always just like having interesting people to talk to. And you are an interesting person. I know you because your board brought me to NYIT way back when you were a college student. And I've stayed in contact because I've just been super impressed with you as a person, both for your spoken word performance art and just being a cool dude. So it's been fun to see you sort of also really excelling online with your content on TikTok. You answer a lot of questions about the Sikh faith, the different questions that random people have that don't know anything about Sikh and what that means in Sikhism. And is Sikhism correct?
Yeah, Sikhism would be the term, but as a follower, I am a Sikh.
You are
so
a Sikh.
Christianity, Christian, you know, like that.
Yeah, and that in and of itself is like one thing I never knew because I always pronounced it Sikh. I think
right,
that like a lot of people do until I saw your videos. I never knew anything about your turban, and you've explained a lot about that, which is super cool. And I really just enjoy, you know, if you want to learn about Sikh, go to, what is your TikTok?
Nav the Poet.
NAVTHEPOET, Nav the Poet on TikTok. And, you know, it's a really great form for that, because it's like, you know, 60 seconds at a time. You can learn all about this stuff, which is really interesting to me. So let's get into it. I have stakes for each one of these. Now, the first four questions are multiple choice. Okay. And for this one, here's our stakes. We're playing for a joke.
Okay.
So I know you're not a comedian, but everyone's got jokes. So we're playing for jokes. So if you get it right, I have to tell you a joke. But if you get it wrong, you have to tell me a joke.
Okay.
Here's the question. Here's question number one. In professional wrestling, the choke slam is a move in which a wrestler grabs the neck of another wrestler, lifts them off the ground, and slams them down. What historical figure is credited with inventing the choke slam? Was it A, Pee Wee Herman, B, Abraham Lincoln, or C, The Big Show?
This is a really interesting question.
It is. It's a really interesting episode.
Wow, I don't have a clue, so I'm just, thank God it's multiple choice. At least I have some semblance of.
And thank God, like, none of this matters. This is all just for fun.
I know, but we want to be right. Like, I think that's a human nature thing.
Sure.
I'm going to say C, The Big Show.
The answer is B, Abraham Lincoln, believe it or not, invented the choke slam. It was way back in the in 1831. And there are multiple records of a particular fight he got in. Now, his wasn't professional wrestling. It was actual wrestling, like, as in, let's settle a dispute by wrestling.
Right.
But he chokeslammed a dude, and everyone knew about it. So, yeah, do you have a good joke?
I don't know if it's good, but I actually love really corny jokes.
Me too.
So I've made some myself.
Okay, perfect.
Why did the Jedi think he would never get married?
Why did the Jedi think he would never get married? I don't know.
Because he had been Solo for so long.
That's actually really good on two different levels. It's so good. That is a fantastic joke. You have redeemed yourself from losing the first question.
Appreciate it.
Now, are you still doing any poetry lately? I think I asked you this the other day. Are you still out performing at all?
So I actually just went to DC last week to do a performance at this interfaith event. Obviously, with the pandemic, haven't been able to travel and perform too much. I've done a couple of virtual performances, but as I'm sure you know, audience is, like, without an audience, it's never the same thing. Especially for your act, I imagine it's even more than mine, because people can be silent during mine, and that's kind of okay, but you need the laughs and the response.
It makes a difference. I would think that virtual poetry would be difficult. I think that even then, like, I know that you feed off of audience members nodding their head and snapping and, like, you know, seeing that they're listening. It's huge. And when you do a virtual show, a lot of people keep their cameras off.
Yeah.
And it makes it really tough because you feel like you're just performing for a computer, you know, and it's
I think actually creating content has kind of helped me with doing that, though, because I make videos performing my poetry just to a camera. So it's, you know, it still isn't the same as an audience, like in front of people, but it has helped me to just handle, like, okay, this, I'm doing the same thing that I've done on my TikTok videos. So
now, what is it like after you perform or after you write a piece and you say it for the first time on stage? What does that feel like?
It's strange, actually, because no matter how much I practice it at home and, you know, how much I've looked at it on paper, to actually perform it and then get audience reactions and responses in real time, like, it's not just people coming up to me after the poem, it's seeing people's reactions, they're nodding, clapping, whatever you get. And so my brain then is processing the parts that hit, the parts that maybe didn't, or where maybe where I need to change my delivery of it. So, and I don't know if that's the same for other performers, but I, in real time, as I'm performing, am analyzing my own performance. And so, but the first time in particular, I don't know how it's going to go. Maybe, not that I ever think people are going to hate it, but it might not get the response that I'm thinking. Like, sometimes I go, oh, this poem, it's a banger, like, this is just gonna kill the audience, and then it's like a lukewarm reception. But I have to also be attentive, every audience is different. You know, maybe it's just the mood that night, maybe my own mood could affect it, you know. So the first time is a really strange, surreal experience, walking off stage after I performed a poem for, like, the first time.
I imagine sometimes there are parts of the poem that surprise you with doing You know, you didn't expect that part to get a reaction. You thought this other part was going to get a reaction. I know as a performance artist myself, that's like a really nice surprise when that happens. And then there are parts that you think is going to be amazing and then just sort of falls flat and you have to figure out why. Which is why it's good to record.
Sometimes
everything.
I do incorporate or attempt to be humorous in my poetry. And so seeing if that lands or not is interesting because it's a different art form. So maybe people aren't anticipating laughing. So they're like hesitant to laugh as well. If you make a comment or in my poem, I write something that I'm like, this is supposed to be humorous. Like it's okay to laugh. But I think people have that perception like, oh, it's a poem. So I'm supposed to sit and wait and respond appropriately.
Yeah, you have to sort of deconstruct that preconceived thing that they walk in with. And say like, you know, this is supposed to be really deep. Is that thing that he said funny? Am I allowed to laugh at it? Or is he saying it funny for impact of the next thing he's going to say?
Right.
Absolutely, man. Well, that's fantastic. Really cool to learn about. Now let's move on with the quiz. For this next question, we're playing for an admission of something we do well. And I mean something other than poetry. So if you get this one right, you've got to tell us, if you get it right, I've got to tell you something you're good at. If you get it wrong, you'll tell me.
Okay.
The single arm choke that precedes a choke slam is known colloquially as what term in the wrestling world?
Okay.
So the word just for the choke has its own word. Is it A, bamboozle, B, goozle, or C, floozle? Doesn't this sound like some Dr. Seuss stuff? It's either bamboozle, goozle, or floozle.
I'm going to go with... Huh. I'm going to say B, goozle.
You are correct. It's goozle. According to a wrestling blog that goes by the name goozle, a goozle is an old slang term referring to the throat. So in wrestling parlance, a goozle is a choking maneuver with the palm of the hand, whether it's to set up a choke slam, to choke a guy in the corner, or to be Meng and put Doug Dillinger in a world of hurt. I don't know who those people are. I just read that.
Yo, that's amazing.
I don't know who those, you get that, but I don't get that. That's just what I got from the blog. So
what's funny is this tells you how much wrestling I watch. I didn't know the term goozle, but I watched this guy who does reviews of pay-per-views and he had used that word a bunch of times. And so I didn't know what it meant. I just thought it was like, you know, something else. I thought it was like he tricks the guy or something.
Right.
But I was like, okay, that must be because he used it when he was doing a review of a Kane match. Right, the wrestler Kane. Kane grabs people by the throat through his chokeslam. So that makes sense.
That's amazing.
That's how much wrestling content I consume.
That's great. Your wrestling content really came in handy for that one. And I've got to tell you something I'm good at, which if you know me, I am someone who imposter syndrome is like a daily thing for me, really difficult for me to do this. And that's why I put this in there, because it's a great exercise for everyone to be able to give yourself credit. I'm going to say this week, I'm saying... I'm really good at connecting my thoughts with written word. Not like you in an artistic, like poetry type, but just writing my ideas in a way that makes sense. I'm good at connecting those things. So whether it's writing one of these episodes or writing down my feelings in a journal, I'm able to complete that connection really well. So I'm going to give myself credit for that today. Internet says it's true. Your self-help podcast.
I mean, I feel like I recognize that the way this has flowed so far, I was like, whoa, this is a really just like smooth flowing. And maybe part of it's because whatever, I don't care now at this point, I'm planning to do my own podcast. So maybe I'm being a little more analytical of other posts to understand it, because I don't know how to do that.
Well, one thing that's really helpful is doing it. This is episode 88. And so having done it for close to 2 years now, you become more comfortable just talking to a microphone with the format of your show. You know what works and what doesn't work, and there's less guesswork. So, and just like performing poetry, just like doing a magic show, that makes it look like you start on expert level when you really don't. If you go back and listen to the first few episodes of this show, the first 25 episodes, I didn't know what I was doing. Okay. And it wasn't until episode 26 that I really kind of started coming into the format of The Internet Says It's True. So I appreciate the compliment, though. Now... your TikTok account, I want to talk about briefly, because you not only you're a very, very positive person, but you also get like haters. You get like people who are negative because they don't know about your faith, or they are purposefully just being negative because they're anonymous and they can. How do you deal with that? Do you ever internalize that away from the platform of this social media website?
I wouldn't say I internalize it. I do sometimes, it does get to me, and sometimes I end up making, not recording myself, but I make draft videos out loud, and I'm just shouting, I'm just yelling, I'm just calling these people, you know, derogatory terms,
right,
just to kind of just get it out.
Sure.
And then I process that and go, okay, how can I actually address this in a way that is both productive for me and beneficial to my audience, and not that I don't necessarily care to respond to that individual if I can kind of sense they're being intentionally negative. You know, some people, like you said, don't know. And so I'll respond and just say, hey, you know, maybe explain it a little bit, and they actually will comment, oh, okay, thank you, I didn't realize, my apologies.
Sure.
But there are people you can tell based on comments, usually they don't care to learn. So
right.
Usually my content is made in response to help those who are willing to listen. And that also helps me kind of stay focused and stay positive, because at the end of the day, I have that purpose, that mission, that goal of, you know, helping people understand that want to understand. I know I can't change minds. I know I can't remove all the hate in the world. So that's not my focus. And I'm just one person. But what I can do, as I've been able to just discover through TikTok, is that I can help people who want to learn more learn. And that's, you know, that's where I put my energy into. And putting it in that perspective lets me go, okay, I'm a little annoyed by this comment, but what can I do with it? How can I make the most of this and turn it into a teaching moment?
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, we're going to keep moving with question three. And for this one, we're going to talk about jobs. So for this question, the stakes are this. We're playing for a coveted The Internet Says It's True sticker.
Okay.
This, if you get it right, you get a sticker. Abraham Lincoln did a variety of jobs before he was president. Which one of these, and only one of these, was an actual job held by Honest Abe? A, he was a liquor salesman. B, he was a cobbler. Or C, a typist.
I'm going to go with liquor salesman, A.
Liquor salesman. Is there a reason that you went with liquor salesman?
I don't have an exact reason. I just, I don't know Abe, obviously, so I can't base anything off of my lack of knowledge from it, but something about the idea of being a typist was, I don't know, strange, and also a cobbler. Sure. So
cobbler is something that I just wrote down. He was never a cobbler. And typewriters did not exist during Abraham Lincoln's life. So A, he was a liquor salesman. You are correct. Lincoln and William F. Berry co-owned the Berry and Lincoln General Store, and in 1833, they were issued a liquor license for $7. I did see, like, quite a few places online said, oh, Lincoln was a bartender, but he wasn't really a bartender. It's probably more accurate to just say he was a liquor salesman, because he didn't own an establishment where people went to drink. They just bought their booze for a very short time. They were not very good businessmen, Berry and Lincoln, it would be pretty great to have a bar called Berry and Lincoln. Especially in Illinois. I'm sorry, what were you going to say, Nuff?
I was going to say, because you asked me what made me... So C, I was pretty sure was not a thing at the time, but I also didn't want to sound unintelligent and say, oh, because I don't think typewriters were around at that time.
Right.
So I just reserved my answer for nothing.
That's good enough,
I have
man.
A discomfort with the revealing lack of intelligence.
Well, maybe that's something you're good at. If you would have missed that other one, you could have said that one. You're good at... noticing discomfort about revealing lack of intelligence. But honestly, you know, when I choose these questions, these are a way for me to add additional info, just fun info at the end of every episode. And usually they're things that no one would know, no matter how big of a wrestling fan you are. And so for this next question, for question four, and you're doing well, you're you're 2 for 3 for question four. If you get it wrong, you have to tell us about one of your favorite websites. If you get it right, I'll tell you about one of mine. Which one of these is considered the largest professional wrestling event in history? Was it A, the LA Massacre, a 3-day event at the Staples Center in 2003? B, the Island Happening at Exuma in the Bahamas in 2017? Or C, Collision in Korea, an event in North Korea in 1995?
I'm going to say C, Collision in North Korea.
You would be correct, Nav. You got it right. Collision in Korea. That's the correct answer. And it was a joint event put on by WCW and New Japan Pro Wrestling. Took place in Mayday Stadium in Pyongyang, North Korea, bringing in over 300,000 people over 2 days. Now, with that said, many reports state that a majority of those who attended were forced to attend by the North Korean government. So, and I threw in the island happening at Exuma in Bahamas in 2017 because I wanted to see if any of the listeners caught onto that. That was my reference to the Fyre Festival. That was the island in the Bahamas where the Fyre Festival happened in 2017. So, no wrestling event there. There was no water.
Yeah. So, again, my guess was based off of some consumption of wrestling interviews. And I've heard wrestlers talk about how absolutely insane the fans in Korea are.
Wow.
And so I was like, I'm just going to, that sounds like it would make sense. That would be a big event there because they're just apparently really wild. So,
it's pretty great. You know, the only time I've ever hung out with professional wrestlers was in Korea. Believe it or not, I was just doing a tour for the Army, for the U.S. Army. And so were they. And there was a group of half a dozen wrestlers. And some of them are good friends of mine now. You know, Nick Densmore, who wrestled as Eugene, a good friend. He's been on the show. I stay in touch with Eugene. But man, some of those guys I didn't know about at the time. And I've looked up after and were big deals. Like Raven was on tour with us. And he's like one of the most decorated wrestlers in history, you know. Billy Gunn,
he's one of the best.
What's
just
that
like over just like character wise as a character? He's
absolutely
like lauded as one of the best
and loves magic, so he and I did a lot of magic together. Billy Gunn was with us, Scotty Too Hotty. There were Seven Thorn. I know, and these guys were just doing like, you know, performing on the same base as I was but on different days, and we had a day off. And we were able to go and attend one of their matches, which was so much fun.
So was theirs just like some independent show?
It was, yeah. It was. Okay. None of them were. I don't believe any of them were affiliated with like WWE at the time. Right. Some of them have been. I know Billy Gunn has gone back to sort of like, you know, the show afterward. Yeah. Some of them had just sort of come off of that, but yeah, it was just an independent. I think ICW. I don't want to say it wrong. It was some independent wrestling federation. So it was a good time because in the evenings we would go out and like party with these guys. Nice. And so I've got some amazing pictures. You know, drinking in bars with Eugene and Billy Gunn and stuff. So
that's really cool.
It was a good time. It was a good time. And so I've had a few wrestlers on the show. I had Doug Basham on Joke Story Trick not too long ago, who I met through Nick Densmore. So
nice.
Yeah. Now you're doing well. You're 3 for 4 and there's one more question left. And Nav, this one is for all the marbles. So if you get this wrong, I'm banning you from the show, never to be asked on again. If you get it right, I would love to have you back on.
Okay.
Here's your question. What is something that you're excited about?
I mean, I mentioned it earlier, but working on and releasing this podcast is something I'm really excited about because it's kind of a way to take what I do on TikTok and expand it. So it's a podcast where I talk with other six so that people who are interested in learning about the faith and the community, really, because a lot of what I cover on TikTok is the principles and the beliefs. But in this way, with having conversations with other six about how the faith plays a role into their life, people can really see the practical and more pragmatic, you know, aspect of the faith and how the community really applies those principles to what they do, both personally and even in their professional lives. And so I'm really excited to give people that insight and that exploration.
Now, that's a right answer, by the way. So you'll get that one right. But I have questions. Like, I want to know, is your purpose with the podcast to make people consider the Sikh faith? Or is it to explain for community what it is, to answer questions that people not of the Sikh faith have? I guess what I don't know if there's an evangelical proselytizing sort of part of that faith.
No. So actually, we don't believe in wanting to like getting people to convert at all. We believe in sharing the teachings and the beliefs, but ultimately the aim isn't to make people follow or join. It's more of just providing this, what we see as wisdom that they can apply to their lives, hopefully. But the point of the podcast is really just to give a different perspective on the faith, because the people who follow me on TikTok or social media, really, I, as far as I can tell, I'm like their only exposure to the faith.
Probably are.
And
yeah.
So giving them, giving other people voices and allowing them to tell their story and how the faith applies to what they do. So like some of my friends that I'm interviewing or hope to interview are artists, or they are, you know, working in different, you know, realms of society. Actually, the first episode, I interviewed my friend who joined the army, and he actually went through a legal battle that went all the way up to the Supreme Court to be able to serve in the army with his articles of faith. Oh. So exploring those challenges and struggles and also triumphs, because he eventually got the accommodations needed. I think it gives people more of a tangible insight versus this is what we believe. Like, we believe in equality for all, but how does that really stem? Or like selfless service is another core tenet, but how does that really factor into our lives? Like, what do we do that you know, really shows that idea of selfless service versus me just saying, yeah, I believe in selfless service, you know?
Absolutely, man. I'm excited for your podcast. Do you have a name for it yet?
Yeah, it's called Rooted in Sikhi.
Rooted in Sikhi. So
yeah,
that's
so Sikhi is like the
S-I-K-H-I?
Yes.
Okay, awesome. I will make sure that once you get that going, I will, I'll give it a mention. Let me know as soon as you get some episodes up. I'd be happy to get some ears on your podcast. And I'm sure I'm interested, because like I said, your TikTok is fascinating. I love it. And I love that you have built such a large audience with this. Like, you have fans with this that are, they're energized and they're excited. And I know that from my experience doing magic on TikTok, no one cares about the magic, but they care about the other stuff I do that feels more real, right?
Yeah.
And you might have the same thing with your poetry. I don't know, but like, it seems like you do 100%. Your poetry and you want, like, this is something you've spent hours on. You want them to really respond, but they want to hear about, you know, why do you wear that on your head that way? And how do you wrap it? And what's, you know, what does your hair look like? And all, they want to know like the stuff that they don't get to ask. And so I think a lot of people will be interested in the podcast.
So that's
absolutely, man.
Funny thing, actually, the reason I started is because, you know, the algorithm with TikTok and the For You page, it's, you can appear on anybody's, you know, page.
Sure.
And so I thought to myself, oh, there's probably a lot of people seeing me that have questions, but are worried about offending me by
right.
asking those questions. So if I start talking about it and at the end say, feel free to ask your questions, I open that door and hopefully reduce that discomfort. And yeah, just the questions start flooding in. So
that's great. I've often thought about doing that at the end of mine, just saying, if you have questions about the experience of a middle-aged white cisgender male, it's a very strange experience in America, feel free to ask.
Yeah,
but all my followers are white cisgender males.
I totally agree that, yes, like, I sometimes look at my videos of my poetry and I'm like, why is this not have more views? Like,
yeah, it's frustrating.
So much time with this.
Yeah.
But, you know, you just have to get out of your head with social media and just be like, hey, what people like, they like. And,
yeah,
you know, enjoy what you like as well. Like, I like making videos about movies, and those don't do well necessarily either.
Right, right.
But I like making them, so I'm going to keep making them.
Sure. That, once again, that's Nav the Poet, NAVTHEPOET on TikTok. Where else can people find out about you, or if they want to see you perform your poems in full length?
Yeah, so TikTok and Instagram are the two main platforms I use. As I start to get more shows, hopefully this year, I post about it on primarily Instagram, actually, because that's the better place for news, I feel. Like, TikTok, everything's just timeline-wise, it doesn't make sense. Yeah, so Instagram is right now the place. As I mentioned, this podcast will be on YouTube. It's a video podcast that I'll be releasing hopefully next month. That's the goal.
Okay.
YouTube is Nav. Actually, that's the name of my YouTube channel.
Nav.
It's all about me.
It's great. it's Nav the educator, Nav the poet, and Nav the man.
Yeah.
There you go. You should have like three faces.
I don't know. That'd be a cool logo.
Yeah. Nav. All right, man. It's so good to catch up with you. Thank you so much for taking some time today.
You too. Thank you for having me.
Well, that's all for this week. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you for Joseph for the topic, and to Navpreet Singh for being my guest. Here's a kid who's so small, he would be easy to chokeslam.
Thank you for listening to The Internet Says It's True. Don't forget to join up on Patreon if you want to see the unedited video of the guest appearance or to hear bonus episodes. You can do that at patreon.com/MichaelKent. Also, if you learned something that you didn't already know from the show, please visit iTunes and leave us a review with 5 stars and a few words. That's the rule. You gotta do it. That helps us a ton, because that's how the algorithm works, to get the podcast suggested to more people. And that way we can keep learning something new, if the internet says it's true.
The Internet Says It's True. We'd like to thank the Patreon subscribers whose monthly contributions help to make this show possible. Sean Brown, Catherine Morgan, Bryce Swanson, Eugene Anderson, Matt McVeigh, Jim Martin, Joanne Martin, and the show's official Emperor Kick Track. The show was written and produced by me, Michael Kent. The theme song is by Finite Music Forge, and additional music this week was from Kevin MacLeod. All audio clips in this episode are used for education and commentary and used under Fair Use Title 17 USC Section 107. You can listen to past episodes by searching for The Internet Says It's True wherever you get your podcasts, and you can see bonus content at patreon.com/MichaelKent.